Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Sing me a song from the SpongeBob musical. Can you remember any of them?
I'm not a loser.
That is one of the better songs in that show. Hello, I'm Jess.
And I'm Andrew.
And welcome to Musicals with Cheese, a podcast where I try to get Andrew to like musical theater.
That's what the show's about.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's it. So, Andrew, I got a question for you.
And what's that question, Jess?
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
You know, there's so many answers to that question that I'm really not sure I can give a concise one.
Who recently had a creator that died out of nowhere?
Yeah, there's a reason we're doing this one. What did we have planned before? We were going to do like the Grinch or something?
Yeah, we were going to do the Grinch here and it would be a big Christmas episode. But instead, Steven Hillenburg had to go and die. So this is a tribute to him. We are doing the SpongeBob SquarePants Broadway musical.
No, just a brief thought on Steven Hillenburg. I feel like he really made the show work, because when he left the actual show, not the Broadway show, the SpongeBob SquarePants television series, which as we all know is high art, when he left that show, it really did go downhill. And then he came back for the newer movie, and that one was a lot better, I felt.
And he came back for more recent seasons, and he worked on the show pretty much up until the day he died.
Yeah, so rest in peace, my man, Steven. You are a hero of mine, at least.
And mine, too, because Andrew and I are at the age, like, we were relatively at the right age to watch SpongeBob right as it started and it was at its peak. So we can quote it just about as well. It was amazing. Like, it was unlike anything that we'd ever seen, because we were used to, like, things like Rugrats and anything like that. We haven't seen anything that was, like, tame but dottest.
Rugrats is garbage. I'm just going to throw that out there real quick. Really, it's not good.
What, you don't like poop jokes and mispronouncing words?
Da, 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 da.
The best part of Rugrats is the theme song.
Yeah, my buddy's a percussionist, and I'll play it on the mallet sometimes, and it pisses him off.
So, SpongeBob. SpongeBob SquarePants the Musical is a stage show co-conceived and directed by Tina Landau, with songs by various artists and a book by Kyle Jarrow. It is based on the Nickelodeon animated television series SpongeBob SquarePants, and it made its world premiere in June of 2016 at the Oriental Theater in Chicago. The musical premiered on Broadway at the Palace Theater in December of 2017. It opened to critical acclaim, which was actually shocking to me. I actually expected, like, the Broadway snobs, like Ben Brantley, to, like, come and tear the show apart, but no, it was pretty well received. It had 12 Tony nominations. It tied for most nominated of that season alongside with Mean Girls.
That's actually really impressive, because it's the fucking SpongeBob musical.
I know, but I could not find like a strict, like, exceedingly negative review when I looked it up. Like, it's strange. Like, Dean Richards of WGN TV gave it an A plus. Every single review praised the set design, and I can't disagree. And notable critic for the New York Times, who is exceedingly hard and like gave Glenn Berger like an anxiety attack every day during the Spider-Man debacle, called it a ginormous giggle of a show and particularly praised Ethan Slater, who played SpongeBob's performance as the titular character. It's strange. Like, he specifically said that Ethan Slater represented like the cartoon form on stage, and I can't really disagree with him.
Yeah, I feel like there's gonna be some disagreements on that, but they definitely did put a lot of effort into the show. Was there actually SpongeBob writers that helped write the show, or was this entirely outside of that?
It was written entirely separately from them, at least from what I gather, but it definitely had the blessing of the SpongeBob writers and Nickelodeon.
Well, I mean, I would assume they would have to get the rights to actually make the show happen.
Right. Well, more like they were willing to help, but I don't think they actively participated. All right, but SpongeBob's life on Broadway was relatively short-lived. The show closed at the Palace Theater on September 16, 2018, due to construction at the theater. A United States tour is planned in 2019. At the time of its closing, it played 29 previews, 327 regular performances. So, relatively well-received by critics, but did not do amazing financially. So, I find this show very interesting just because everything was set against it, basically, as it could have just been like a Shrek the Musical or one of the Disney adaptations, but it wasn't. It decided to put effort in the ways you wouldn't expect an adaptation to do so.
To be honest, going into it, I thought it was going to be like one of those Universal attractions where it's like, hey, it's SpongeBob, and he's in like his little square suit.
I was too.
Would have been a bit of a disaster, I think, but...
And they didn't. They thought of really creative ways to design every single one of these characters that are both true and novel.
Squidward's legs in this are like the star of the show.
I agree. It's tied with Ethan Slater's performance and Squidward's legs.
I'm going to have to give the Squidward's legs. They even had some good musical numbers, you know, with their like, whatever sound that makes.
But the sound design on this show is fucking incredible. Like, every movement that SpongeBob makes has the notable sponge noise, same with Squidward's tentacles. Like, they had to sync up with every actor so specifically, and I don't ever remember there being a moment where it was off kilter.
I liked when Pearl walks into the stage, they have, like, the big drums and all that.
Like, little things like that show that there was an insane amount of effort to make this a quality show when it really could have been a Universal attraction, like Spider-Man Turn Out the Dark.
I think we can go right into the plot. I think that would be a good time.
All right.
If the world is gonna end tomorrow, wallowing in sorrow won't get us anywhere. You'll find all the strength you need is inside. Like the satin riding across the tide. Don't let this moment pass by. Come on. Hero is my middle name. Fixing trouble is my game. Just give it the old know-how.
So the plot of SpongeBob the Musical is shockingly dark. Like, surprisingly dark.
It's not really out of tone for SpongeBob to be dark, though, if you look at like either one of his movies, they do both go in that direction, but I don't know. I wasn't really expecting an end of the world story for the SpongeBob musical.
But you feel the stakes for the first time in any SpongeBob story. Like, you feel like there is risk in everything that they're doing and that everyone's taking the stakes seriously, even though they're still very much their characters.
I feel like there was stakes in the first SpongeBob movie, but that'd be the only thing comparable, I think.
But still, not as high as this, where they're very much all aware that they all could die tomorrow. Like, there's never the threat of actual death in a SpongeBob story, like it or is in the show.
Okay. I think that it gets a little confusing, though, because they kind of frame the volcano thing like it's a plot from Plankton. But I don't think it is. Am I wrong about that? I don't think it is.
No, the volcano is just a happenstance, and Plankton's trying to use the happenstance to his advantage.
That seems a little odd to me, because generally, the big bad is always Plankton, and it's his fault that something is happening.
Mm-hmm. And just because it wasn't Plankton as the true mastermind behind it all, you felt thrown off?
It just seems odd, because he's like... I guess this is skipping ahead, but towards the end of the show, when he tries to stop them from saving the town, it's like, why do you really care? It's just happenstance, right? Like, wouldn't you rather not have the town destroyed?
Well, no, he wants to get everyone together so he can brainwash them into liking his restaurant. You know.
But his restaurant's not going to exist when it's destroyed by the volcano.
But yeah, like, so the basic threat of the SpongeBob musical is this volcano is going to erupt and destroy the entire city, and basically everyone will die unless they leave immediately. Very much the Hurricane Katrina story.
Jeez, you're going to go there? Hurricane Katrina?
Sorry, the Bikini Atoll story.
You got to just bring in real life disasters into our SpongeBob episode.
I mean, as dark as the show gets, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if, you know... You know, something.
Yeah. Okay, Jess. You just like to bring up disasters.
Mm-hmm. And this is a true ensemble show where every character... Like, the biggest issue I have with all the SpongeBob movies is that not every character really has an involvement in it. Like, the first SpongeBob movie, like, Sandy is almost not in it at all.
That's true, and Mr. Krabs is frozen for, like, 90% of it.
Yes, and I think this show uses every single one of its, like, characters, both the ancillary characters and, well, the secondary leads, very well.
I think that, in regards to Sandy not being in the SpongeBob movie that much, though, in earlier seasons, Sandy was kind of a much smaller role than she is in modern SpongeBob. So
I disagree. She was like his love interest and like the voice of reason in a crazy world.
In a few episodes, but she did not appear in very many episodes.
Still, like, you cannot have a modern SpongeBob story without Sandy, and I think that this musical actually uses her very well and gives her an arc that's really compelling. Like, she feels betrayed as, like, the other in this town and is about to get run out and wants to go back home, and then she figures out, like, hey, this is where I belong. Like, there's an arc for her here. Same with SpongeBob. He's like, I don't know where I fit in. Like, I don't know what I offer anyone. And then he figures out what that is. Every character has a very dramatic arc.
They take the arcs that these characters have already done and they just kind of put them all in the same show. Because the whole SpongeBob wants to be manager, that's directly from the first movie. Sandy not being accepted is from a few different episodes of the show. What else was there? Patrick, like, becoming a king was literally, that was an episode of the show one time. And Mr. Krabs and Pearl is something that's done very often on the show. So I feel like they just kind of take all of those and then they kind of put them into one show.
Yes, but they take them, they add stakes, and they learn from, like, the giant, like, issues going on, as opposed to, like, just a 15-minute narrative.
Well, the SpongeBob being manager thing was a full hour and a half, okay?
Along with other things in that movie.
Seriously, Mr. Krabs, why couldn't SpongeBob just be the manager of the Krusty Krab 2? Like, really? You're going to give it to Squidward?
But I think that the overall narrative and SpongeBob's entire character arc, it makes sense, because I never really bought in the movie that SpongeBob would actually go out and go on an adventure and take it very seriously. Whereas this one, everyone is kind of against him doing it, and therefore he's just kind of doing it for his own gain and his own, like, altruistic needs for himself.
I can understand that. I think SpongeBob is a flexible character that you can kind of give him motivations for anything, though. Like, sometimes he's responsible, sometimes he's like a little kid. He's kind of flexible.
And I think that the musical interpretation of SpongeBob is not exactly the SpongeBob we see on TV either.
No.
He's a much more interesting and compelling character, and he has, like, intense flaws, and he's much... I don't know what it is, but he has much more machismo and masculinity than he does on the cartoon.
and a much more pained laugh as well.
He sounds like he's in agony.
Yeah, the voice work for SpongeBob is distractingly off, I would say. He sounds like Pee-wee Herman.
I think it was closer in the Chicago run, but I think they toned it down so it would feel a little bit more natural to Ethan Slater's true voice. Which I think is the right move.
I think it was a mistake. I think I wanted to see SpongeBob, and it was distracting that it wasn't.
Well, the thing is, I think it would be more distracting if you saw someone doing an impression that felt unnatural than someone doing something natural that wasn't quite 100% accurate.
I think you're right. So I think the real solution would be we need Tom Kenny in this show.
Old ass Tom Kenny. Well, Tom Kenny could not do 1/4 of the physical things that Ethan Slater could. Ethan Slater is a masterclass of using his body.
Are you kidding me? Tom Kenny would be up there in his wheelchair doing all that shit.
Tom Kenny is many things, all of them wonderful, but he is not a physical comedian.
Okay, we've gone so far off track of the actual plot. We got to like square one of the plot.
I mean, we kind of covered it. The world's gonna end. SpongeBob's gotta fix it, and he recruits Sandy and Patrick to come and help him out because he sees Patrick as like the strength and Sandy as the brains, and he doesn't quite know where he fits in. And through it, he has to climb Mount Humongous, which is a funny name. And he climbs it and saves the day eventually. Of course, he and Patrick have the second act breakup, and then they get back together in the end.
I kind of wish they just didn't do that, because honestly, it just feels so forced and doesn't really have much of a purpose.
I think a lot of the second act feels really, really stretched and strained. I feel like this could have been a much shorter show. It could have been a really good one act show in the same way that Fun Home is like a good hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like SpongeBob fans are all little kids anyway who have no attention span, like me. So, like, you gotta make it kind of short.
I think that if we trimmed it out, cut out the concert subplot with Squidward trying to arrange a concert and cut that down to its bare minimal, I think we could have a really strong, strong one-act show. But that's not what gets asses into seats, and people that are paying for Broadway seats want to get the same amount of time as they're getting at Les Mis across the street.
Let's see. I wanted to talk about the insertion of a mayor character.
Sure.
Which doesn't... I don't like that at all.
Why?
It's a theme that is not in SpongeBob whatsoever. And then they just kind of put it into the show just to have, like, some political humor, it seems like, which isn't even really, like, actual political humor. It's, like, the most bare-bones political jokes you could possibly make.
What, she didn't say make Bikini Bottom great again?
I mean, I'm surprised she didn't say that, but at the same time, that would have been even worse.
I don't know. I feel like Bikini Bottom runs as a solid state of itself. Like, there's no other, like, fish city around it. It's the only one in existence.
Well, this show kind of implies that there is other ones. They're, like, saying that they're going to move somewhere else.
I always thought it was, like, nuclear reaction from the Bikini Bottom, like, bombings of nuclear, like, bombs.
What?
So it's, like, the only, like, city.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Because Bikini Bottom is an actual place where they did nuclear testing.
Oh, my God. You're saying that it's directly related? That's what you're implying?
I mean, why the hell make it Bikini Atoll, Bikini Bottom, if you're not going to relate to that? And literally, there's no cities around it. It's just, like, one city in the middle of that little gray, like, land area. I'm not the first one to make this theory.
Right. I mean, it's not that far from shore, though. How far is Bikini Bottom from shore?
I mean, is it just that one island, according to, like, the SpongeBob show?
In the SpongeBob lore, David Hasselhoff was able to swim there in a relatively short period of time.
Because David Hasselhoff has superpowers where he doesn't get, like, nuclear, like, fallout radiation.
Okay, so your theory is they're nuclear.
It's the same theory fish. As Ed, Edd n Eddy, where they're all in purgatory.
Yeah. All 90s cartoons are purgatory.
90s kids are the best. But SpongeBob, of course, tries to succeed in saving the city, and then they return back and they're like, what if we failed? And they like do this Toy Story 3 ending of preparing for death, and then death doesn't come. Then they all celebrate and the show ends.
That is exactly what happens.
Yeah, congratulations, the plot Jess. Is not the strong source of it. It is surprisingly dark and it has stakes, but it gets really, really, really monotonous to follow in the second act.
The whole cult subplot with Patrick, I think, should have just been dropped. I don't like that at all.
I think that's funny.
I just don't.
Really funny.
I didn't think it was funny. I didn't really find too much humor in that. I would have liked to see, instead of Sandy with SpongeBob, just have the, you know, SpongeBob, Patrick, Squidward, you know? They're the ones we're here to see.
I like Sandy. Squidward. I really like Sandy being with them.
Well, you could have all four of them. Like, Squidward without SpongeBob is just, you have your straight man, and then there's nobody doing anything with him. You know, there's no hijinks.
So you need the comic foil of Squidward being around. But in the SpongeBob movie, Squidward wasn't around either.
Yes. And I always thought that was also a mistake, but I think it almost works there just because they're just reacting to these really weird things that are happening.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Like the Hasselhoff and that kind of stuff. But I want to talk more about thematically what makes this like SpongeBob and not like SpongeBob. I want to be in the not like SpongeBob side here.
All right, go for it. You're a SpongeBob purist.
I'm a SpongeBob purist, you know? Okay, so
hashtag not my SpongeBob.
One, the art direction of it actually is pretty much perfect, I think. I don't think they could have done it any better in terms of how the characters look, other than Plankton, who just looks like Loki. And I don't know. I think that's awkward. But other than that, I think that the art direction is perfect in terms of SpongeBob. But I think a huge amount of flaws come with the thematic aspect of it, where it's too dark and too serious. And there's just not enough nonsensical, surreal things happening, as well as the music does not sound anything like SpongeBob.
Now, what would you define as SpongeBob music?
There's a lot of iconic SpongeBob music, I think, that I find humming to myself while I'm working and things like that. And a lot of it's like sea shanties. There's some more dramatic type songs where they kind of go into a musical number just randomly, and that kind of works. And they could have done that in this show. But I think there's so many just... A lot of the songs just sound like pop songs, I think.
And that's an issue because they have pop singers coming in.
Yeah. So I think that kind of... It just... There's a few songs that sound like SpongeBob, one of which being the mid-show sea shanty, one of them being the big show number that Squidward imagines in his head, because I could definitely see that happening in SpongeBob. But there's a lot of them that don't sound anything like SpongeBob, in my opinion.
But what do you think about this show trying to be its own thing that can appease both the average theater fan as well as SpongeBob fans? Do you think, like, setting itself apart from that way, like, is a detriment to its show?
As far as me, in my opinion, yes, it is a detriment, because I love SpongeBob and I would love to just see a straight SpongeBob musical. I think that would be hilarious. As far as maybe other people who are not as big a fan of the show, it probably is a better thing that it's its own thing.
I mean, it's strange that the show wants to have its cake and eat it too with that, because they do take a step away and make the music sound very unlike the traditional SpongeBob sound. They had pop music, they had musical theater songs, but then they also have so many callback moments.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the callback moments for a sec. Those are... Oh, there was quite a few of them that I thought were just cringeworthy. And I know I don't like using the word cringe.
But the thing is, SpongeBob never called back to itself in the show. Like, they have never once, like, called back to a joke from a previous episode that I know of, at least.
There's running gags, like the my leg thing, and which actually, surprisingly, I don't think they did that, did they?
Yeah, they did. Squidward pulls out a list and it goes into the orchestra and it, like, makes a bunch of noise and you hear a my leg.
Oh, shoot. I probably just forgot about it. Which, that's fine. I think it's fine to bring back a running joke. I think what I had a problem with was when it wasn't a running joke. They just literally quoted a previous episode.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Like, the inner machinations of my brain are an enigma. Like, that was cringy. Is mayonnaise an instrument?
Which is just out of nowhere. It's that, like, it just has nothing. Like, no one's talking about what's an instrument and what's not an instrument. They're just saying that they're going to sing a song. You know?
And sometimes it works. Like, I think bringing Best Day Ever into the show really worked, even though that was a callback to another episode.
Well, the thing with Best Day Ever is Best Day Ever has been used multiple times in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the end credits of the first movie. Then they made the episode about it. So it's not like it was just a one-time appearance.
Mm-hmm. It was written by Tom Kenny as well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so I can see that working. And I think that was fine. I'm not sure if it was the most appropriate song for them to be singing at that moment in the show, but it's fine.
I think it worked. I think it worked there. It's like the 11 o'clock number, the one that we're all looking forward to.
Yeah, it works.
But I hate cringy, like, callbacks to the TV show. It's like when you adapt Shrek and you're, like, waiting for everyone to hear the lines that they know from the movie.
I'm just, when is he going to talk about onions?
Exactly. When you hit that meme quality on the internet, you're screwed in any other medium, because you always have to call back to that shit.
Well, you don't, though. Like, and I think legitimately fans don't want to see that. if you do it, there are some people that will just laugh because it's an easy laugh. But I think if you don't do it, no one's going to go online and be like, this show sucked. They didn't even call back to whatever joke, you know? It's just something that it's purely fan service, and it pisses some people off, and it makes some people just get an easy laugh.
And so, it makes you work harder. You have to think of your own shit.
Let's talk about Patchy.
Yeah, Patchy is kind of like the bookend of the first act. Like, he comes in the first act, comes in at the beginning of the second act, and he pops up at the end. Much like a usual Patchy appearance in, like, a SpongeBob special. Except he's not played by Tom Kenny, which is really sad.
Yeah, Patchy not being played by Tom Kenny stinks. Patchy wasn't even played by the person who plays SpongeBob, was he?
No,
he couldn't have been, because he came up at the end. That would have been a clever gag if it was the person that plays SpongeBob doing it as well. Just because that's actually how it works in the show, so.
Following the show's own internal logic. But I think he was fun. He was fine. Kept the kids from thinking.
He has one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, Sarah Bareilles killed it with her song.
Poor Pirates is a very good song.
Mm-hmm. I love Sarah Bareilles.
And surprisingly, the only sea shanty in a show that takes place entirely underwater.
Do you want to just go into the songs?
Let's go into the songs.
Hey, sorry to interrupt you in the middle of the show, but we're here to shill at you and announce the winners of our iTunes review contest.
Oh boy, how exciting. I bet you can't wait to find out that you won.
Yeah. All right. So the way that we're doing this, to be fair, is I've randomized everyone that's put up a review, and I've randomized it like 40 times and made them into a list. Andrew has not seen the list, and he has a 20-sided die. And whatever number he lands on, it'll correspond to the people that have reviewed. So are you ready, Andrew?
Oh boy, howdy, am I ready.
All right, Andrew, roll the dice.
Drum roll, please. And I've got a 10.
That is Ellie Cat 7211. Ellie, A-L-L-E-Y, Cat 7211. So if you reviewed us on iTunes under that name, please send us an email at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com, and we'll set you up with an Amazon gift card for $25.
God damn, that's more than I make in a week here.
That's more than we make off this podcast ever.
Yeah, you're literally stealing all of our money. So congratulations to Alley Cat, whatever that number was.
7211.
7211. That's a lucky number right there.
Yes. Please send us an email so we can give you the reward. We're going to be having another one of these contests, so please keep reviewing. We got something else planned, and it's going to be really cool. And I know it's specifically going to appease a lot of musical theater fans. So we got a couple cool things on the horizon. The new year has great things for musicals with cheese, guys.
It's going to be cheesy.
Yeah. All right. Now let's get you back to the show already in progress.
Everyone's so scared and sad. Just one volcano that's not so bad. Until Bikini Bottom's gone, let's all keep calm and carry on.
Do you want to know the list of all the famous people that wrote for the show?
I don't think we have to do name by name.
Too late. Jonathan Coulton, David Bowie, Plain White Tees, T.I., Panic at the Disco, Alex Ebert, Cyndi Lauper, Yolanda Adams, The Flaming Lips, Sarah Bareilles, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, Lady Antebellum, John Legend, They Might Be Giants, and yeah, it's a crazy list.
They got all the big guns of pop.
I'm pretty sure this was the last song that David Bowie ever wrote.
It might be. When did this album come out?
This came out in like 2016.
Yes.
And I like the song. I really like No Control a lot.
All right, so I'll let you talk about No Control since I can't remember how it goes and you seem to
No
like
Control
it a lot.
Is basically when they discover that the world is ending and they are like, oh, what are we going to do? And SpongeBob's like, why is everyone freaking out? This is going to be fine. Everything's always fine. And everyone's like, we're going to tear each other apart.
SpongeBob, I think, a little bit overly optimistic in this moment.
Mm-hmm. And Ethan Slater really lets his vocal chops come out. Like, he, like, does the splits and screams at the same time. Like, holy shit.
This task force is for losers. I've got the perfect plan. Right now the getting's good, so let's get out while we can. Look, lava's pretty hot. Let's give in to our fear. Disaster's on its way. That means we can't spend no more time in here. You all know who I am. Evil genius, giant brain. You can't stop a volcano. I mean, are you all insane? The ones who stay will all be vaporized without a doubt. Before that sucker blows, we gotta get the fish out.
Fish out, fish out.
Then Plankton raps.
Yeah. The next song is When the Going Gets Tough, as written by T.I.
Is this Plankton's only song? No, he has one other one, doesn't he?
I don't remember. I'm not going to lie. I don't care.
I can't remember, but if this is Plankton's only song, that kind of stinks, because I don't really like it very much.
I hate the song.
You got Green Loki up there rapping about something, and I honestly don't even really know, because Plankton's plan in this is so unexplained. It's just like he wants to get everyone into a bus or something like that, and then they'll have to eat his food.
Basically.
But then they have to raise money to buy the bus. I would assume Plankton made the bus, or did he really not?
It doesn't matter. He's got an evil scheme, and you know it's clever because he went to college.
He went to college.
And I think that line's great.
That's another line that's basically from the show, though.
Still, it works.
Yeah.
I really don't like this song. It feels like someone saw Hamilton and was like, we need rap in our show.
We need rap.
Put it in. Who do we got? T.I.? Let's call him in. Let's go. Give it to the whitest actor we have.
I think there's a joke about that, though, where he's like uncomfortable doing it, or the computer doesn't want him to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not effective. It's not effective storytelling. It's not effective songwriting. If you want rap, give the characters a reason why rap is the only way they can sing, instead of just be like pandering.
Look, pandering is amazing and gets you money.
Let me have adventure, be a contender and more. I wish he'd see I'm not just the sponge next door. There's gotta be a better way, a way to save this town I love. But how can I stop the end of the world? Am I just a simple...
The next song is actually my favorite song in the entire show, Just a Simple Sponge, which is SpongeBob's I Want song, which is just to be seen as more than what he is.
He's done songs about the same topic in the past, you know, like how he's a goofy goover and he wants to rock, you know, stuff like that. But I guess this one works okay as well.
The Panic at the Disco, who wrote it?
The Panic at the Disco?
Yeah. Is that not what they prefer to be called?
Jess, it's Panic at the Disco.
Satanic at the Disco wrote this song, and it's really good. It's one of the better I Want songs like in Broadway this season. It's very clear and very specific while keeping true to SpongeBob's like overall message.
I definitely agree. I think it's a pretty good one.
Like, you can see Tom Kenny singing the song.
Actually, we can't. He's not done it. Maybe someday.
I think Tom Kenny would sing the song and it would sound just as good.
They don't not like me at all. I don't not leave the house, cause I don't not prefer to stay at home. I don't stink.
You don't stink.
I'm not awake. I'm not all alone in thinking that I am not all alone.
All right, So do you want to talk about I'm Not a Loser by They Might Be Giants?
Of course I want to talk about I'm Not a Loser.
This is your favorite moment in the entire show.
I like Squidward. Who doesn't like Squidward? Everyone likes Squidward. Okay, this is not... It's not rocket science here. You give Squidward a show number where he does a clarinet solo, it's gonna be a good time, okay? That's it. That's all I care about.
What about, like, his several legs doing a tap number?
Oh my god, it's so beautiful.
Like, this is the cheese Andrew wants.
It's so good. And I love that they're in the, like, they were in, like, the shiny suits, right?
Yeah.
Like, the sparkly... Oh. It's perfection. The best part, the best moment in the show. And I think it makes up for some of the, missteps earlier on with some of the songs. It's just, it's great.
Past 2 days, the world's been closing in on me. But when I'm feeling down, I can lose that frown. Just stick my head out the window and I look around. Lava doesn't scare me, it can't disguise this magic that's happening right before my eyes. Whatever comes, there's just one thing to do. Make the best day ever with all of you. Today's the best day ever with
all of you now.
Yeah, and then there isn't many songs in the second act. Except for, like, what comes next, which is Best Day Ever.
Yeah, which I feel like even talking about Best Day Ever, it's like, it even feels weird just because it's not even from this musical. It's something of its own. So it's, I don't know. I think it's a good rendition of it.
Yeah, Ethan Slater kills every song he sings. Like, his voice is incredible.
It sounds good. It's not really actually written for this show, but it works.
It effectively gets everyone back together on SpongeBob's side.
All right, and now let's talk about the most important song, the theme song.
Everyone comes out and sings a theme song to remind you what you just watched.
Shouldn't they have done that at the beginning?
Nah. That would take away from Jonathan Colton's amazing Bikini Bottom day.
Well, they could have done it before that. Like, as the, I don't know,
just
before, with Patchy could have sung it, because Patchy was out on the stage before the show. Maybe he could have had two songs.
Nah, I think it's great as is.
All right, you know what? Fucking hate my ideas. That's what it is, Jess.
This is we're done professionally.
We're done professionally.
I love that quote. Thank you, Christian Bale, for giving that to me to use whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew, let's talk about the design of the show. We touched upon it a little bit earlier, but let's just talk about how the show looks, because it is very interesting and effective, like 100% effective.
I think it really captures the vibrant colors of the cartoon like really well. And it makes them more... human, I guess, because obviously you can't have an actual sponge on stage without it looking like a horrible Universal Studios fucking musical. So I think they really did the best that they could do, and it looks really good.
Like,
is this what we're talking
about?
Yeah,
my favorite design element is the jellyfish, which are literally just umbrellas.
I forgot about that.
I think that's fucking brilliant.
Oh man, that, yeah. What about like the circle of ladders that they have to climb through?
And that's the mountain. That's brilliant. I like how the entire design of the entire show is like trash, but reused and reinterpreted into SpongeBob things.
Danny DeVito would love this show.
I'm the trash man.
No, I think that they did a great job, like, just all around.
I just wish the effort that was put into, like, the design was put into, like, more of the story aspects. And, yeah, it is obvious that the story... Like, I appreciate the story because it is an original tale. It's not like they're just adapting one of the SpongeBob movie into a stage musical, which I... was worried they might do. But still, it doesn't feel... I don't feel the verisimilitude of it being a SpongeBob story.
I think that they should have had the SpongeBob writers come and help on it. I think that it could have worked. I feel like they tried to put in like more surrealist elements, like the fucking weird cult thing that happens, or Squidward having like a dream sequence, but it all feels too grounded. Everything feels too grounded.
Which I also kind of like, because it actually makes you feel like there's stakes and things to be concerned about with these characters. Like, they might lose their lives, or at least their home.
I feel like with SpongeBob, though, you really don't need stakes. It's SpongeBob is just jokes for the sake of it a lot of times. I think the stakes being low is kind of part of the show.
Right, but you can't keep people watching for 2 hours if there's no stakes. You can't just have, like, a variety show for 2 hours.
Yeah, but you also don't need to make it 2 hours.
If you've got a Broadway show, you need to live up to Broadway standards, and it needs to be 2 hours with an intermission, and your kids need to take a dump and make it ruin your entire night for you.
Oh, don't use the bathrooms during the intermissions. It takes forever.
Yeah, don't do that. Just shit in the sidewalk.
What you do is you take two poops before the show. Then you won't have to take one.
You force one out.
If you can't reach up in there, get it out of there.
You know that stuff you get before a colonoscopy, that horrible Satan juice? Drink that and you'll just be clean.
Take some laxatives.
Don't take too many, or else you won't be able to poop later in your life.
If you're getting ready to see a Broadway show, you gotta get your Broadway care package, your laxatives, your vacuum cleaner.
Gotta clean you out.
It's important.
Your juice cleanse. Or else, how are you gonna sit through all 7 hours of Les Mis? You gotta take a dump sometime. Take it before I clean you out.
All right. On that note.
Andrew.
So, Jess.
What are your overall thoughts on the SpongeBob musical?
What are my overall thoughts on the SpongeBob musical? I'm really mixed on this one.
And you wanted to like this. You really wanted to like this.
Okay. The design is great. The performances are, obviously, they put effort into them. I think that I would have preferred if they went more with the cartoon voices, but they didn't. That's a personal thing. The music is good, but it doesn't feel like SpongeBob. I'm all over the place. And I think the biggest thing that I don't like is the plot feels messy. And like things like Plankton's motives, just everything's vague and I don't know. So I'm gonna have to say that I'm going to give this a big old mixed. I think it's a fun thing to watch for the music and the performances, but it's not something that I'd want to see multiple times.
Do you think with a few rewrites it could have been better?
Definitely, yeah.
I'm of a similar mind, but I also have... I'm probably a little bit more positive on this than you, just because I have some personal feelings about this, that about Broadway in general, that make me angry.
Oh, okay.
Because... anytime anything directed at families or like things that kids might want to see, Broadway at large gets snobbish and wants it out. And I feel like that's a lot of the reason why SpongeBob got ousted so early, is because a lot of people are like, this isn't true theater. Why is this here? And I'm thinking like, fucking everyone goes to New York and they want to see something with their kids, and they can't always take it to see Wicked. Find something that a kid might actually want to see and you'll get Broadway sales up. And you've got this show, which a lot of effort was put into, a lot of good songs are written for, and it's not perfect, but it could have been entertaining for kids and adults. Like, you and I found some entertainment out of it, and yet people just wanted to shit on it. Not critics, but like the general public, so much that like the social media page had to get up everyone's asses about like, why are you cheering that our show is closed? And a lot of people lost their jobs. Like, I feel that it's not fair and that Broadway needs a place where kids can go because not everyone wants to fucking see The Lion King and Wicked.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm still pretty much just an outsider on this, but speaking about the community or communities like this in general, because I mean, there's other communities like this where it's like you have this really small group of people that like this very specific thing. And they're like, why does no one else like this? Why does nobody else like this? And then anytime something comes along that kind of panders to the mainstream, they're like, well, that's not the real thing. It's like, well, you got to get people into it somehow. Like,
and it frustrates me a bit that people don't see that. And I try not to be a snob. You know me. I'm not like, this is better than that because of this and this. Like, it's all wonderful and I love it all. And I want to embrace it all. And I feel like the fact that people weren't even willing to give this a shot makes me angry.
Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't, like, love it, but I could definitely see value for children, having something for families to view, some outside appeal because it's a property that already exists. You know, it's something that could get people into music theater in general.
And compared to something like Shrek the Musical or Aladdin the Musical, which are just the movie on stage, something like this is kind of rare.
Oh, I didn't give a cheese rating.
No, what is your cheese rating, Andrew?
I feel like if I didn't give this Swiss cheese because, you know, porous and the holes and it looks like SpongeBob, it would be a mistake, so I'm going to give it Swiss cheese.
It's not like a sponge-related cheese?
I don't know anything with sponge-related cheeses. Is there sponge cheeses?
I mean, I'm not the cheese expert. You are.
I'm not a cheese expert. I'm going to give it Swiss cheese because it's the cheese that has holes in it that I can think of off the top of my head.
Good. I'm glad you put so much work into this show, Andrew.
You know what, Jess? Fuck you.
Oh, Andrew, this was a lot of fun. I actually really liked this episode. I think it turned out pretty good. Thank you guys for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher at Musicals with Cheese. We just wrapped up our last contest for the $25 iTunes gift card, but please still keep reviewing, keep sending us out there. We got another contest coming in, and if you keep reviewing, you'll keep being put into the podcast or into the contest. So thank you very much, and you're going to like what's coming up. Please follow us on Twitter at Cheesy Musicals, on Instagram at Musical Theater Lives. Our YouTube page is Musical Theater Lives. Our email is musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Our title card was created by Jolene Casco. She's an amazing person. Please hire her for everything. She does great work. And her Instagram is Jolene Casco. So please give her a ring. Give her a jingle. Tell her she's cool.
And congratulations to our winner, Alley Cat, some number. that I cannot remember, in case you skipped our commercial.
Yes, in case you're just like, fuck that. The winner of the $25 Amazon gift card was AllyCat7211. So please, if that's you, send us an email at musicaltheaterlives@gmail.com. Tell us what you want so we can give you a reward. If you don't come up to us in at least a month, then we're going to do this again and send it to someone else. So get it while you can.
Hoorah.
Hoorah.
Have a good night, everyone. Or a good day.
Or a good day, whenever you're listening to this. It could be like next year. It could be in 2021. Hello in 2021.
Most people listen to this on their commute, I think. So good. Have a good day.
Have a good day. Work's going to be fine. You're going to make it through. I'm proud of you for getting up this morning.
I'm proud of you, but quit your job. It's a mistake to go.
Quit your job and start working for us.
Start working for us. We make the big monies.
We'll give you a good job. Come on. Just send your applications to us.
Come on, Keith. Come on.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. I'm Jess.
And I'm Andrew.
And this was Musicals with Cheese.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at SuffsMusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.